Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Go away.
Listen, I'm sorry, but I had no choice. I couldn't let you leave.
Oh, well, I'm leaving now.
I need you.
You got something to say, say it.
I need to know where you came from.
So do I.
Flank 'em.
This is Film Sack. Oh, sure.
Hello, and welcome to Film Sack. Yes, that's right, this is Film Sack, mining the very depths of film entertainment for all mankind, episode 645. I'm Scott Johnson, joined today by Brian. Every time he tries to take a dump in a raging river, aliens come and wreck everything Dunaway.
Oh, really up shit creek now. Oh, hi. This week on Film Sack, our disappointed parents send us outside to play a game of cowboys and aliens. The space guy, not the alien types. The alien types? No, the illegal types. Whatever. It's like my brain's been sucked up by some alien stuff. Anyway, cause that would just be silly, right? Silly. Two classic genres of film being smashed together to form one giant ball of sci-fi western gold in them there hills from 2011. Now streaming on Netflix and stealing our brain cells one shiny liquid orb at a time. Don't look at it. So pretty. Wait, who am I? Anywho. Greetings, fellow alien prospectors. Just a few words before we get started sucking gold from this dusty-ass planet like a piece of corn stuck in a human's back teeth, or as some of the locals call it, maize. Now, as you are aware, after centuries of evolution, we have developed hard outer shells, giant eyes good for seeing in the dark, and an extra set of tiny grabby hands growing out of our hearts. Good for being extra greedy, with the caveat of exposing our life-pumping to stabby knives hearts. So let's stay safe out there and be sure to keep the use of your heart grabbers to a minimum unless absolutely necessary. Now, who am I kidding? Grab your heart's content. What could possibly go wrong? Randy, you eyeballing my apple, son. Because this apple wasn't meant for you. It was meant for my biological son. Randy. The other Randy.
The other Randy.
And the other Randy.
Of course. All the Randys.
Oh, hi.
It's all the Randys. All the Randy ladies. Anyway, hey, nicely done there, Brian Dunaway. Also with us, Randy.
Tumble through.
He changed to his body so he could warn everyone, Jordan.
Ooh. Aloha, Scott. Brian. And thank y'all for coming to this here campsite where I'm going to have over a dozen men draw guns and point them at you. And somehow, when the fighting starts, there's all going to be two people hurt, and you're looking at me like you don't even know who I am. It's the Scottish accent, ain't it? Well, I'm just a completely meaningless extra boss fight, and you boys are going to continue on your way across this very familiar landscape. Boy, seems like we were just here 2 weeks ago, ain't it? Go on, and you'll do fine as long as you... One, two, three. Number one, if you ever meet a little lady who can resurrect herself from being burned in a fire like some high plains Ifrit, you find a way to sleep with her. I got nothing more to say about that. Just trust me, brother. Number two, when you're doing some frontier surgery on a man, the way you make it so that he doesn't have to spend the next 4 weeks healing before he can even put on his own hat is you pour some booze on the wound and then you drink some for yourself. Right. It's magic. Number three, never lift your shirt when you could dramatically rip it instead. So sexy when you do that. Now, take off all the rest of your clothes because you got them off those men you killed and they're filled with body lice. Yeah. You're welcome.
Ugh, gross. Yeah.
I thought about that.
True and gross. Finally, we have Brian. He dumped all our matches off the side of the alien ship rocket thing, Ibbot.
Doofus. Yeah, no kidding. Hold on. Let me yell at this guy over here in the corner. Hey, play something lively, would you?
Come and listen to a story about a man named Jake, a Rocky Mountain cowboy who made but one mistake. One day he and his true love to take a little trip and wound up getting abducted on an alien ship. Anally probe, that is. E.T. going fingers up the hoo-ha. Well, the next thing you know, Jake can't remember shit. Joins a gang in Absolution, boy, they sure do like to spit. And then, like it happened in the first part that I sang, the aliens abducted some more members of their gang. Dollar Hyde's dipshit son, too. Aliens gonna drink his milkshake. Like Cowboys and Aliens show.
I love it. Next level.
Well, Jake and friends, they saved the day, rescued a dozen peeps, but not before they lost 100 men to those alien creeps. The good news is that I don't need to save this backing track, cause we're never gonna watch the Beverly Hillbillies on Film Sack. Over my dead body, I already gave you Johnny Mnemonic. Y'all go back now, you hear?
Bye, Granny.
Oh, my Lord.
Perfect.
Wow.
Perfect.
Okay, no, I got questions real quick here. How did you, because you're known kind of publicly for sort of reviling all things
yes.
Beverly Hillbillies.
Hillbilly humor?
Yeah, and hillbilly humor in general, you're right. So what drove you here? What how'd you get there?
Okay, so I knew that once I saw this, I knew I wanted to do a story song, like basically one of those songs that recounts the tale, or recounts the tale of the cowboys and the aliens, like it's told like a legend. And I started with One Tin Soldier, and it was really it was seriously going to end with Walton Goggins rides away. That was the only part I was sure I was going to have. And then it was the whole like reading the lyrics, and like the whole go ahead and treat your neighbor, go ahead and cheat a friend. It was like, no, maybe I don't want that one. And that kind of drew me over to this one is because it begins the same way. It's like the first line is come listen to a story. And the one tin soldier is listen children to a story. There's a lot of songs that. And it's like, okay, I know I want to begin like that.
Yeah.
And then it just fell to Beverly Hillbillies.
Amazing. That was, I agree with Dunaway.
I try to guess every week. And I was guessing Falco's Cowboys and Indians. I thought,
A while before I saw the movie, I was thinking, I wonder if I could do Bowie's Loving the Alien. For this, but it's way lesser known of a song. If I'm going to do Bowie, it feels like Fame or Space Oddity or something like that will work in the future for one of these. Yeah. See, that would be good.
Yeah. You got it. But I think Bowie's actually kind of a gold mine. No pun intended with our film here, but there's a lot of gold in the Bowie hole.
Yeah, the upside down Bowie boat.
Yep,
the Bowie boat. I did want to have something about the aliens like mining for gold, and it was going to be, you know, gold, orange oil,
liquid gold. Zero gravity liquid gold.
Actual liquid gold.
Well, we're going to. Oh, go ahead, Randy.
This might have been a good one for you to jump on the Ballad of the Dukes of Hazzard. it's just like.
You're just going to pull all my greatest hits, don't you?
Yeah.
Hillbilly humor.
There's a certain sound, you know.
Just a good old boys.
That one.
No harm.
Yeah, that'd work. Yeehaw! At the end, and then
let's watch this movie again in 5 years, and I'll do that one.
Okay. There's a thing about like banjos.
Yeah,
it just fits with this.
When they finally make a sequel, we'll get that going.
There you go.
I'm sure that's always definitely going to happen. Yeah.
The point is this: me, Scott, and Randy are all amateurs, and we like to armchair quarterback. Right. And you're the professional here. I defer to your brilliance.
Yeah, you do the music. We're all going to listen and enjoy it. And you're all home going, wait a minute, what movie is this? I think I have an idea. Well, it's Cowboys and Aliens. And how do we know that? Well, Fake Fletcher explains.
Cowboys and Aliens!
Yeah. A spaceship arrives in 1873 Arizona to take over the Earth, starting with the Wild West region. All that stands in their way, a posse of cowboys and natives. Pew, pew, pew.
I like the elongated pews.
Yep.
Pew. About it.
Yeah. The longer the pew, the better the view. I don't know what that means. Yeah. Anyway, it's the movie Cowboys and Aliens 2011, as you know, directed by Jon Favreau.
Yes.
This would have been his, let's see, he had already done Iron Man 1 and 2, and then this was the following year. Yeah. Where he did this here deal, and he made it with Alex Kurtzman, Damon Lindelof co-writing this. I don't know who Roberto Orci is, but he had some work on the writing.
His writing partner.
I thought Orci was the. I thought he was the comic creator. No, because this is based on a comic, but I got to look the guy up. Here he is. He is.
They may have made a comic, but I'm just saying Kurtzman and Orci are like credited together on so many scripts from like 2005 to.
Oh yeah, you're right. He works on all sorts of stuff. He also did. I guess he writes with Lindelof a lot. Those two like to hang out.
Yeah.
This is based on a comic that I read years and years and years ago, and I really liked the comic book. And I remember at the time going, "Man, are you guys going to really make a movie out of this? This would be interesting." Because there's one core problem with making this live action that I felt then, and I feel now after watching it. Which is, I enjoyed this movie more than I thought I was going to enjoy it. Actually, I had a pretty good time with it. But
right.
I think here's your main problem. A movie like this is a premise, two premises. One is aliens and one is cowboys and, you know, Old West. And both of those things, to take them seriously, kind of need to be self-contained within their genre, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. So if you're going to have a good alien movie, it needs to be very focused on the kinds of things that make a good alien movie. If you can have a good cowboy movie, same thing. The problem here,
each thing has to work on its own without relying on the other.
Correct. And what this movie does is it's competently doing both things. Like, these are good aliens with like good special effects, and they're scary as shit, and all that stuff's good. That they did a fine job. The cowboy side of it, especially before the shit hits the fan, is a capable start of a Western. Like, it feels like a Western. Yeah. It doesn't feel like they're screwing that up. I just think when you take both of those things and you try to jam them together, Reese's Pieces style, like Dunaway would say.
Yes, Reese's Pieces bullshit.
You run into a problem, and that problem is it's then hard for me. And again, I'm mostly talking live action because I think animation and comic book formats are better for this stuff. But or books, even books are, you know, you can get away with this in books.
Sure.
But when you do live action, you take both those two things and you mush them together. Unless it is just some level of new perfection that no one thought of before, it's not going to work.
You see me wiping my hands clean, because you know what? You've just taken the whole thing. You figured it out. You've done it. You solved it. We're done. I think that's exactly right. I think Scott nailed it.
I mean, and it's unfortunate because you can tell this is capable. You can tell Favreau knows how to direct. We already kind of knew that. These are good actors with good performances kind of across the board. Especially, I like all the side stuff. You know, you got your Walton Goggins in there and your freaking Clancy Brown early on, although he gets killed pretty early, but. You know, these are good actors.
There's so many side bits that this movie. I just want to say I like this movie so much more than I expected to. My only reasoning now that I'm looking back at it, like, it came out in the summer of 2011. How did it not do better? My only reasoning is that audiences were in a mood, and this movie has somehow grown over all that time, over the last 13 years. Like, that we can now see what they were trying to do. More clearly than we could at the time.
I think that's probably true.
Such a fun movie.
Sure.
Gosh, I
had a great time too. And that's the funny thing about it is I did not expect to like it. Part of me was biased from all the hate that it got back when it came out, and it did terrible at the box office. Yeah. And so I assumed, well, this is just shit from top to bottom. It really isn't. It's like a very capable, fun movie. It reminds me of 80s movies we don't make anymore. You know,
I liked it a lot more this time than I did when I saw it when it first came to video. When this came to video, I was on the Netflix DVD plan where they send you two or three DVDs, and as soon as you send one back, we'll send you the next one on your list.
Right.
And for whatever reason, I didn't like it then. I liked it a lot more now, and I think that this probably got a lot of hate initially because people unfamiliar with the comic thought the title implied something, or basically was like that Snakes on a Plane title. I think right. If you're not familiar with the comic, it's a crap title for a movie, Cowboys and Aliens.
I kind of agree. I think it works.
The aliens came to Absolution would be
right. Well, it sets an expectation that it's going to be 100% tongue in cheek. This is going to be a bunch of funny moments from beginning to end, and it has some really intensely funny moments. Mm-hmm. Like there, and it puts it all on the shoulders of our two main actors, right? Like Daniel Craig and Harrison Ford have to be 100% committed in every second they're on the screen, and then when they glance at each other and are like, you know, making those mug faces, they're going to still be totally in character. And like the name of the movie doesn't fit it, you know? The name of the movie, you're like, this could have been a Seth MacFarlane comedy.
Yeah. That's the name. The name is Seth MacFarlane. Yes. The actual execution is a little more serious. And it's also very true to the comic. The comic takes it seriously. It's like this, what if this happened during a out of history time where we don't think of these things crossing? And I would argue if this was called Gangsters and Aliens, or take any other genre, it doesn't matter.
A
big genre thing, and take it and mush it together, it doesn't work for the same reasons. It's just, okay, you got a capable gangster movie, and then you got a capable alien movie, and you've mushed them together, and it diminishes both sides just out of, I don't know what it is, natural selection. It's just the way it worked, and it's not great. But all of that being said, there's a real effort here, and it feels like they really meant it. And the effects hold up. The music's good. The acting's good. The action scenes are, I think, really good. And I bought into these characterizations. I think Daniel Craig may have been not the best choice for our lead, but that's fine.
I enjoyed Daniel Craig so much in this movie.
He's just built weird. There's something about how he looks.
Yes, he is absolutely built weird.
He's built really weird.
Yeah. This is a guy who's 6 feet tall and has a 26-inch waist or something.
Yeah, but it's weird.
There's something so awesome about Daniel Craig in this role because it's a trope. It's a trope I can't stand, but I love it here. And that is a man without a past, doesn't know who he is. He's a blank slate, and you just know as soon as he starts doing stuff, you just know, oh, he used to be a bad guy. Mm. And now I'm going to be questioning constantly, you know, like, oh, but is he actually a good guy deep inside? And like the amnesia is going to, oh, what a trope. And he does it perfectly. He's just right for them.
Yeah. I don't know. It could have been anybody for me, but he was fine. I mean, I like Daniel Craig a lot. I like him. He's good.
It had to be Daniel Craig.
I just don't know what happened. we got an early chick in the bucket for me, which is right here.
Grab a bucket.
Where's his wife? I get no closure on her. What happened?
Yeah,
there?
We do.
No,
you do. She's Yeah. She got ashed. Yeah.
She got that ashed.
Why don't I remember that part?
It was a very quick scene.
Maybe having you blocked it out. It's terrifying.
Yeah. It is.
They're like in a vivisection room.
Yeah.
And
I saw that. I saw all that whole thing, but I don't remember her getting.
They showed it. He kept flashing back to that section. And if you'd have looked away, you wouldn't have seen it because he looks over at one time when he's going through his peyote dream, whatever it is. Mm. And when and she just evaporates. She just like turns into dust.
Yeah, like you have a light that goes up her body and basically like burns her to a crisp.
Oh, I did completely. Very easy. That thing was such a haze that I just didn't get that from it. I didn't see her going. All right, well that makes sense, and that makes sense that it, you know, that memory coming back is a shocking one, and he's all pissed after, and I get it. So that makes sense. But she came as close as I could to a. Yeah,
that scene is also super important because in his fight to get out, you know, he gets both the wrist gun and he slashes the alien that was doing the vivisection that killed his wife. Yep. And when that comes back later, everything in this movie is Chekhov something.
Yeah.
Everything.
The only real chick in a bucket, maybe I missed it, but Shit Creek got pulled away by a horse and we never seen him again. I don't know if
you Yes, you did. Did you see him again? At the end. Everyone who gets pulled away by the aliens ends up getting rescued.
Well, see, I didn't know he ever got captured by aliens because.
Yeah, but he does show up at the end.
Last time we saw him is he was getting drug away
by the horse. Yeah, yeah. Right. But he does show, Randy's right that he shows up in the cave staring up at the light.
Well, there's a lot of dirty people there. I don't remember everybody.
Yeah, it's hard to notice who's who.
A lot of them kind of look alike.
Yeah. That place looked like it stunk to high heaven. I don't know what it was. Yeah. Something about a sweaty, humid, freaking. All these cowboys are already gross and dirty. Like, ugh.
Yeah, you know, Paul Dano's looking at that light farting. You know,
dude, I love Paul Dano, and I love seeing him in shit that I didn't know he was in. And here's another example of that. And he's such a weasel.
Dollar hide.
Oh my god. So I'd forgotten he was in. I forgot Sam Rockwell was in this. He's great.
Yeah.
Underused Sam Rockwell. Yeah. That disappointed me.
I thought perfectly used. I felt like he was the right amount because he's a butt monkey, right? Which is a trope, we like in small doses. Right. And also, like, the whole movie, you're going, I wonder if he's going to ever become a good shot. That's fun.
Could have been something, he could have been something better. I mean, in this case, I feel like anybody could have been in that role. It seemed like Sam Rockwell should be off doing something cooler than
you could have had. You could have put Scoots McNairy in there. That could have been there.
Scoots.
In fact, for a hot second, I thought Scoot McNairy was the guy who pooped in the river. I thought that was him for a hot second. It wasn't, but that guy, this movie needed Scoot McNairy in it. And why he wasn't in there? Big mistake, guys. You should have had Scoot.
By the way,
oh, I love Scoot McNairy, dude. That guy.
No. I'm saying in the movie, Lonergan, Woodrow Dollarhide. These are they really got the names right.
Yeah, they did. Yeah,
Dollarhide and Doc being Sam Rockwell. I love the fact that he never once saved anybody by his doctoring. The only thing he ever saved anybody was with his gun.
Yeah, every time he showed up to do doctor stuff, he stood up and shook his head.
We need a doctor over here. He'd show up and go, yep, they're dead.
Yeah.
Too bad. Just confirming.
Yeah, he'd just look up and go, yeah, they're not going to make it. It's not happening. It's like, well, what good are you, dude? But I guess him and Favreau are still lovers from from his role in Iron Man 2, which was fantastic, I thought. So in this case, I thought, well, he is a little underused. It did feel like a friend got cast, and that's fine.
Yeah.
But I wanted more out of him. I love him.
I saw this at the theater, and I went right away. And Cowboys and Aliens, I felt like it prepared me entirely for what I was in store for. And I went in, and I watched this, and I was like, yeah, this is – I had fun. I had fun. And, it got some shit, but it didn't get, like, huge amounts of shit. Most of the time, people still consider this maybe a little above average. Some people probably consider it below average, but, you know – nobody like shed on it and said, this is the worst film ever.
No, it was just sort of unremarkable, I think, at the time.
Right.
And it's positioned as a, you know, it's supposed to be a new franchise, a big, bold, blustering, loud summer hit. And it just didn't do it.
Yeah, I only wanted one. And then I wanted that to influence how we would get Mandalorian later on. That's all I really needed. How to marry, you know, Western / frontier / alien stuff.
Well, that's the stuff where you can do it. Westerns and sci-fi mix really well. And that's a place you can pull that stuff off. Mostly it's a sci-fi with Western tropes. And if you do that right, you get Firefly, you get Mandalorian, you get things that make sense. I think this is discordant because we don't associate any kind of technology, foreign or otherwise, to come down and mix well with your early 1800s scrap-a-doodle freaking moving west stuff. It just doesn't work.
Well, you nailed it at the beginning of the show. I mean, you laid it all out because what happens in a Western has to take itself very seriously. And about halfway, every time they start to get kind of veering into seriousness, they take a big old left turn because everything that they're doing, everything that they're fighting for, totally inconsequential. Once you introduce aliens with you know technology,
you also need to magically or technologically remove all evidence that this took place, and there is shit in the river that you're going to find, and then you've got that whole what's the Star Trek thing called where you can't tell the
prime directive.
Prime directive. You got prime directive problems.
These aliens are not worried about that.
No. I don't mean that. But what I'm saying is, you've got like some rustlers who've got a big ship wing that landed in the river, and it's full of advanced technology and metal they can't explain. And it's
but actually that works in our actual history. This huge debris field of alien parts is in New Mexico, where we think people saw aliens in the past. Mm. It works.
They did film this in New Mexico. That's true.
This movie.
Well, this is a true story. What are you talking about?
This really happened.
Yeah, this is real. I don't know if you knew that.
Yeah.
I get your point, but I don't think it works that well. I just think that it is. It is better than everyone said it was. I really had a good time. Right. Like, I had fun with this in a way that I haven't, this felt like Zemeckis Spielberg produced, and which he did do. He produced this. Zemeckis had nothing to do with this, but it felt like one of those movies where, Battery's Not Included
That's a good one.
There's a class of film we used to make back in the day, and often big names like Spielberg were behind them. From a production standpoint, not directing and writing, but he was like into it, right? And they would come out and they would not be, you know, think of Spielberg Prime as like AAA, and these were like AA, and they were Battery's Not Included. But that's that's what this felt like to me, even though it was big budget. It felt like one of those that we just don't get anymore, because you either have to go huge or indie these days.
Right.
And that feels like, actually, video games have the same problem. People are either going huge or they're going tiny little team, made a little game.
Right.
And there's not a lot of middleware anymore. And I miss that in movies. I miss the middleware where they're not trying. This is reaching for the stars. But it, in the end, it felt to me like, oh, yeah, this is just a good time. This is just a this is a Saturday afternoon at the movie theater. Just, and, you know, we're going to get popcorn and shit, and it's going to be great. And we're going to have dinner after, and we'll probably talk about it.
Perfect description. Popcorn movie. It absolutely is. Yeah.
Yeah.
We got our 007, Daniel Craig, probably trying a little bit to keep from getting typecast, you know, and going, okay, I want to do something fun. Here's something obscene. What's that?
That's going to be my main point of reasoning on how is this movie like better than it was 10 years ago.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And the answer is because in 2011, I go see this movie and I'm looking at James Bond. And like the whole time, and I have a really hard time not thinking James Bond. Now he's Benoit Blanc, which is a very funny idea. It's just funny from beginning to end, and I'm in the right headspace for Daniel Craig.
A lot of movies are like that for me. I need to have some room where I don't go, oh, Harrison Ford, we haven't seen him in a while. Oh, I don't know if this is my Harrison Ford. This is weird. He's old, and what's going on? Like, there's discordance sometimes with when a movie happens versus when our brains are ready for it. And I agree with that. Like I remember feeling this way when I saw 2005's Road to Perdition, an amazing movie based on another comic, but an amazing movie. It's got Daniel Craig in there as an evil brother adopted brother to Tom Hanks's character. And he's a real a-hole in it, but he has an American kind of gangstery accent. And I saw it after I'd seen the James Bond stuff, which came later for him, a year later or whatever it was, or sometime later. And I just couldn't look at him and go, oh yeah, I have to forget that he's James Bond now for a minute and that he's actually British. Like, it actually interrupted my enjoyment of the film. And I think that may have happened. Wow. That would have happened had I seen this in 2011 versus now. And I don't know why that is, but that's where my head would have been at and it would have bugged me.
Right.
Yeah. Not now though. Man. Like, I see it now. I just go, no, he's just, everyone acts. We're all actors.
Yeah. He's an actor. He's not James Bond. What the hell?
If anything, it just annoyed me that Jason Sudeikis and all that shit behind the scene pissed me off so bad that she distracted me in this. Cause I was just like, you turncoat, you went and had an affair with a One Direction kid. And now that's not even going, you know, like, I just was annoyed.
Exactly. Cause you lost him. The greatest Ted Lasso thing that ever happened.
I just was annoyed by it, but that's fine. She's a fine actress. There's nothing wrong with her, but you know,
I tell you who I enjoyed. Clancy Brown, being good in this movie. And I don't mean like good acting. I just mean being like his character is just wholly good and just wholly wise. Yeah. I'm not used to that Clancy Brown. So, cause I feel like I see so much of the bad Clancy Brown. And I loved it. Oh my God. He was great.
Yeah. I don't like his boiling down to people, who've been shot are either criminals or victims.
Yeah. I like it. But
it's
like
the first thing he says, right?
It's the first thing he says. Yeah. It's like,
first thing. the first thing a character says is funny in this movie every time.
Yeah,
that's all right. I thought it was good. Yeah,
There's sure a lot of people at the end of this movie who are neither criminals nor victims.
Well, he expands on that later, saying that he's seen bad men do good things and good men do bad things. So, you know, he's not a fortune cookie.
It's part of that good Western we're getting presented with that clashes with a good alien movie. And
I really like your initial outline here, Scott, because it's like a Venn diagram. Mm-hmm. There's a Cowboys movie, and that's the bulk of it. And then there's this other circle that's an alien invasion movie. It's a much smaller circle, but they have some overlap, right? Mm-hmm. And the overlap is obviously where people are either being abducted or where people are finally fighting back and resisting and destroying the aliens. And that overlap is the part that you're going to pay the most attention to. There's like you have a questioning element there, right?
Right.
Because like, you know what the other parts, the big parts, you know what they're supposed to be like.
Right.
And this is in that middle. And so like the entire action sequence, which it has every cowboy trope in it, this action sequence where they finally fight the aliens, right?
Right.
There's like, and it actually starts way earlier in the movie. There's things like there's a car chase where Daniel Craig jumps onto a flying alien, right?
Yeah,
and saves Olivia Wilde.
Yeah,
and it's like it's exactly like it was a stagecoach, and he was riding on a horse. He jumps onto the stagecoach exactly. And like I love that stuff so much that I'm super forgiving when it's weird.
Well, go ahead.
This thing could have easily, you know, if you take the alien aspect out of it, it could have easily been cowboys versus other cowboys who figured out how to make flying things.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. That's and they're all, it's all about Gold Rush. You know, it's like all who has the best technology, because I mean, there are obviously comparisons to Native Americans and how, you know, America steamrolled, you know,
took the resources, like basically coming here and taking all the resources. And and I'm amazed that we haven't really talked about Wild Wild West, because that kind of is the bad example of the sci-fi meets Western trope.
They're more that one aims kind of steampunky, but you're right, it's the same kind of problem, right? I don't know why this is, unless you're doing pure parody. Westerns belong in a fenced in zone. They just kind of don't need to expand. Now you can take other things and add Western influence, and then it works. It's just a weird thing that's even the case. And here's the part I can understand. Somebody last night said on our Discord, "I hope you guys saw the rated R cut." And I went, "Oh, there's a rated R cut." And
We did not.
We watched it on Netflix.
Okay, because the reason I ask is
does it pan down to Olivia Wilde's butt when she comes out of the fire? Is that the difference?
I think supposedly it's way more violent and bloody. Violence. And I thought this was. Yeah. Pretty bloody for a PG-13 movie.
Hell yeah, no kidding.
I saw the good version before, but the Netflix is only, it's under 2 hours. The full one's like 216, 220, something like that. Yeah, okay. So
16 extra minutes or something.
I mean, the only thing they cut out really was the Harrison Ford, Adam Beach love scene. You know, I'm kidding. Dollar Hyde and his Colorado ride-along, who was his, you know, his tracker.
He's the wind talker, baby. That guy's
got I loved that story. I loved it so much about Harrison Ford trying to be this badass, you know, and he's kind of a racist, but he's also kind of a good guy as well. And, you know, him taking Nat Colorado under his wing, and those stories weren't meant for you. It made you feel uncomfortable and also kind of close to the characters too, all at the same time.
Dude, the trope of the out of control teenage boy is so freaking perfect for Paul Dano. There's never been a better, but he is, I hated him before I even saw him.
Yeah. He's the King Joffrey of the Old West, basically is what he is.
Yeah.
You know who my daddy is.
You ever heard of him?
His whole bit to the beginning and accidentally shooting another guy. That was great. That stuff was
loving the whole, you know, Daniel Craig, not even looking at him, grabbing his collar when they're in the jail cell and pulling his head into the bars and knocking him out. Just great
stuff. Yeah, that was awesome. There's a really good Western on that side of the movie. It's very good.
Yeah.
Well, and it gave Harrison Ford a bunch of complexities to work with as an actor, because like the rest of the film, you're looking at him like, did he make that boy that way, or is he also a victim of how Paul Dano behaves? You know, and like Harrison Ford's a good actor, y'all.
Surprise, folks. This is a Harrison Ford fellow. I think he's going to go places.
Yeah, he's going to do all right. I mean, he was definitely grumpy Ford with the whole that sword belongs in a museum dad kind of Ford. But I liked it. I also, again, I don't know if in 2011 I was in the right place to accept that Harrison Ford was no longer going to be a leading man slash, young and virile and whatever. He was going to be this. I'm way more okay with it now. I've matured past that. I'm okay with it. I understand it. And I like it. And I wouldn't mind more of it. You know, like even now, what is he in his 80s now? Put him in shit where he's cranky. What's that show you recommended, Ibbot? It was so great on Apple TV.
Shrinking.
Shrinking was amazing.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
So good.
He was so good in it.
One of the best Harrison Ford characters ever.
Oh, without a doubt. Yeah, without a doubt. Like, give me more of that Ford at this stage. And this was a bit of that. And I don't think I would have appreciated it at the time. I'm talking about a movie I didn't see in 2011. So I don't know why I think I would have thought all these things about it. But I don't know. I just get the feeling that this is where my head was at.
Yeah, it's 43% on Rotten Tomatoes. That's a number that's always going to be kind of frozen in time, right? Yeah. You're getting to see what people really thought of it in the year around its release. And it didn't land with audiences then. And I just have to assume that some things have changed. Like, we've now seen The Mandalorian. Back in 2011, we had only seen Firefly. So we had this very particular expectation. But now we've seen these other things that have kind of built on this and that this builds on, you know? Yeah. And it's just like, it's an easier runway for this movie nowadays.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah. I don't know that, you know, this thing couldn't be done. Well, maybe not. Maybe we're done experimenting with it. I don't know.
This could be a fun series. You know, this could be like a fun HBO Max Cowboys and Aliens series and just take some time with it and not.
Yes.
Whatever country.
Because you could have.
Oh, Lovecraft.
Lovecraft Country. That had this kind of vibe, right? And they're mixing two things. They're mixing like a story about race in a very specific time and then sci-fi. Mixing it with sci-fi and eldritch horror and all that.
It would be much better as an episodic type of series because you could have a whole episode that was almost entirely dealing with the cowboyness of it. And then another episode with dealing with the aliens, you could slowly merge it instead of having to constantly flop back and forth between here's full alien. Now it's full cowboy. And it's disruptive. I meant to mention earlier, I love Keith Carradine's character. I didn't know why I loved the sheriff character so much until I went back and realized. I was like, oh, that's Keith Carradine. So he's doing a really good job. He's been in a million Western things.
Yeah, and he's he belongs here. You're right. A million Western things makes it so that he's very comfortable in this role.
Deadwood, if you've never seen it, watch it.
Right? What blew my mind is when they rescue the captured town folk, and he reunites with his grandson. Is that right?
Must be his grandson. They waved it really fast. I think the dad is supposed to be gone somewhere. And I think he actually called him grandpa at one point.
He did call him grandpa. Yeah, he is grandpa. Yeah.
In that one scene, it looks like Keith Carradine lost 50 pounds. And I'm just like, I wonder if the scene was just filmed distant from everything else. Right. And he was just like, this is how he looks now. Or if this guy actually went and lost some weight so that he would look like he had been captured. Yeah.
It sounds crazy, but he might have done it.
He might have done it. That's true. Sam Rockwell, by the way, I was going to make a note here. This is his third comic book movie to this point. He was in Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles from 1990, and he was in Iron Man 2 in 2010.
Iron Man 2.
Isn't Wanted? Was he not in Wanted?
No.
Wanted is based on a comic, but I don't remember if he was in it.
I don't think he was in that.
Yeah.
I don't think he's in that. For some reason,
I just think of him in that. And
Are you thinking of Thomas Kretschmann? He looks a little like him.
Sure. I always think of Thomas Kretschmann.
I'm always, he's always on my mind.
Or McAvoy. I guess McAvoy might be who I'm thinking of.
Chris Pratt was in it.
Yeah. Could have been any of those guys.
Okay.
What else? Daniel Craig and Walton.
Dumb question, by the way. Have we watched Wanted for?
We have. Yes. Yes.
Right.
Yeah. Okay.
I think we have. Hold on. Now, have we?
Jesus.
Hold on.
It's where she bends the bullet, right?
That's yeah.
The
one but I don't think we have. Now that you say it, I don't think we have. I watched this with
the hell did we watch?
I watched it with TV's Travis. I did it.
You haven't seen?
Yeah, that's why I always think I've seen it.
What the hell did we watch with Angelina Jolie and the bullet?
probably salt. Did we do that? No.
Oh, Jesus. Maybe. No. Christ. No.
I don't know.
It's just Wanted is the film, but we didn't sack it. Like, I remember seeing it at the movies, but that was before film sack.
We definitely didn't sack it, yeah. I always think we did because of that thing, but we didn't.
We should put both Wanted and Salt on our
list. I feel like I've been staring at a big glowy object in an alien ship, if I can even remember that crap.
Well,
Salt, looking at the light, right?
Salt got salt dumped a couple times, right?
Already on my
right?
tracking list.
Yeah.
I'll add one.
Yeah, it fell off once because of streaming didn't have it or something. Yeah. Daniel Craig and Harrison Ford are two Star Wars connections. They both appeared in Force Awakens. Harrison Ford obviously is Han Solo, but Daniel Craig was a cameo as a stormtrooper, so it counts. He was in there.
Yeah,
it counts. And then my favorite connection is Daniel Craig and Walton Goggins, who play fellow gang members, were both in adaptations of Tomb Raider. 96's Craig was in Lara Croft Tomb Raider. We did sack that. And then 2001, Goggins was in the Tomb Raider. Oh, and sorry, Craig was in the first two, 2001 and 96. And then Goggins was in Tomb Raider, the 2018 business with Ex Machina lady. Can't think of her name.
Vikander.
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 Yeah. Yeah. She's very cute.
You know what I'm going to call bullshit in this movie, though? I'm calling that shit.
Yeah.
You call some bullshit? Here it is.
Do it.
No animals were harmed in the making of this film. Bullshit.
What? I saw horses flying up in the air.
Horses do not do somersaults.
Yeah, because they're CG, right? Dude. They're CG. They didn't get hurt. Those are fake horses. Those are not.
No, some of those horses were being ridden on, and they were falling face first. And I know you probably trained them. I get it. But I'm telling you, don't do that.
Well, the face first ones are definitely trained. I've seen those before. And those,
right.
And they know they're good. They're fine. They don't get hurt.
Oh, yeah, sure, sure. But I don't look. It's like this. And no horse out in the wild is going, know what I'm be when I grow up? A stunt horse. No. Somebody convinced that horse that he was going to get treats if he did this act. All right? That horse was hurt.
Yeah, that's a fair point.
My kid was questioning the movie because he was like, very first thing, he's like, how old is this movie? And I said, well, it's from 2011. He's like,
1881.
No way. Because like in his experience, the last like maybe 10 years of films have pretty good CG, but things before that are real sus. This had really good effects. Visual effects were really good. I actually had some questionable special effects here and there, but it was fine. It worked out. But for my kid, he thought this movie was like 30 years old.
Really? It doesn't strike me as that old, man. Except for the Western part.
I'm saying when I say 2011, I may as well be saying 1991.
Yeah, yeah. When you're only 13, sure. Everything seems
before a certain
different
year.
Before I was born. Yeah, we were doing this with the Matrix the other day. I was saying, "Oh, the Matrix still holds up." And I was talking to Carter. She was born in 97, and that movie came out in 98 or 99.
Yeah,
and I'm like, "You were 2 years old," and she's like, "Yeah, that's old, Dad."
Yeah, my kid was born in 98, and he says that the Matrix is the most boring shit he's ever seen.
Yeah,
wow.
There's something about think about it when. If you and I were to say, or me and Ibbit, because we're the same age, if we said, the movies of 1972, wow, they really, we appreciate them like Godfather or something.
For
sure.
But if my dad was like, oh, hey, I really want you to watch this movie called Serpico, I'd be like, when did it come out? No.
Yeah, we wouldn't be interested in that at all.
Exactly what Tristan did when we wanted to show him stuff that was like, Ghostbusters and stuff from, Back to the Future, stuff from our age.
Yeah.
Like, what, 1980s? Yeah. Oh my God, that's like nearly 20 years before I was born. No.
There was a post going around the other day about somebody who was complaining that young people today don't appreciate movies from 20, 30 years ago the way that we did. Yeah. And I said,
no.
I said, hold on a second. If I'm 10 to 15 years old and you're asking me to like something from, let's say, the 50s.
Yeah.
F off. Yeah, we didn't have any interest in that shit.
I didn't
shit.
Have an appreciation for that.
I wouldn't sit through the Maltese Falcon as a 13 year old. No way.
No.
Or not any like of I'm it. Older and could appreciate film.
Casablanca? More like Cacablanca.
Well, yeah. No, we're not saying when you get older and appreciate it. Of course you do. But when you're 12. No 12-year-old likes anything 30 years prior to his birth.
Well, I'm gonna back up on that just a little bit. I did like old sci-fi films, but even when I was young,
that's because that's cheesy shit. Where a big rubber monster walks out with strange tentacles, and that's fun because you're a boy, and we love that shit. Whatever, I get that. Yeah. I did too, but But like, if you were going to have me, you're going to say, hey, Scott, you need to take this very seriously.
Wait,
how about Three Faces of Eve? No, no. Right.
We're painting with a very big brush, of course. There are exceptions. I have a nephew who loves all of the crap from the ghost, from the 80s and the Ghostbusters and all that stuff. They love all that crap. Very unusual. Asked to listen to old music as well. And there's always, an exception to those rules.
No, music is a larger exception in general. My kids love 80s and 90s music. They adore it. So
you like bubblegum rock from the 50s?
No,
or whatever.
That's my point. It's different now. Like, I think our stuff aged better. I really do think that. And I also think they grew up in a time where all of their content came across the internet and not some predetermined, UHF channel on the weekends or whatever. They got to choose.
Right.
And because they got to choose, they got to enjoy it more.
I do remember that growing up, I liked angry music from the 70s and really couldn't relate to happier music that came before it, if that makes sense. But I feel like our music, during when our prime years for, appreciating music when we were growing up was also a very angry time. So I feel like angry music holds up better over time.
Yeah,
am I wrong?
I mean, I grew up with Information Society was one of my favorite bands.
Right.
And they were very poppy and positive and stuff. I think there was plenty of that.
Do kids like that today? Do they like the information?
Oh, hell yeah.
They like the pure energy?
My kids love that thing. They love that it's got Star Trek stuff in it. I'm telling you, my son's favorite TV show last year was Taxi.
really? The TV series?
Yeah.
With Danny DeVito.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. He's 23 years old and his favorite thing is Taxi. Like, what does that tell you? It tells you that what's being made today doesn't appeal to them as much as it does to us. And think about it. All these remakes, all these things that are happening, is like, you guys want some more Ghostbusters movies? You want some more of this? You're going to revive all these TV shows from the 80s and make movies out of it? Like, who is that for? That's for us. That's not for my kid. He's like, what's for him is stuff that he has never experienced before, so he's going back. And I think that's a common thing. Not everybody, but common.
This discussion always reminds me of episode one of Star Wars and how about 5 years ago, everyone was so shocked when they started finding out that the younger generation thinks episode one's all right.
Yeah.
Episode two, they're okay with it because they're seeing it for the first time-ish, right?
Yeah.
Whereas when we were seeing it for the first time, it was the last of the Star Wars things that we'd seen. And this discussion is really, you're never going to solve it as a chicken and egg thing here. And that is does the public at any given time like something because of the quality of the something or because of the mood that they're in at the time, right? Mm-hmm. You can't solve it. It's just you get to look back on it decades later and go, oh, I see. We were in a mood for grunge. That's how grunge rose to the top in the 90s. It wasn't like, but also, oh, you know what? That was actually really good music. So maybe it doesn't matter if we were in a mood, right? Because they were giving us something that was great.
Yeah.
So, it's all it's art, man.
Do you think it's kids?
It's art, man.
So if you see a kid wearing a Nirvana shirt, that would be like one of us wearing Led Zeppelin shirts or something.
Absolutely. Yes.
You said absolutely I said the band. Now I'm confused.
I already knew I knew where you were going. I knew where you were going.
You knew I was going. You knew I was going to Led Zeppelin. All right. That's cool.
I was the house halfway down the road before you even finished that sentence.
He knew you were either going to bring up Pink Floyd, Led Zeppelin, or
it was one of those.
There was a handful of groups that we wore on shirts growing up. We all wore them.
Yeah,
it was coast to coast. It's the same. I mean,
there's a little bit of hipsterism with it now, I suppose. But if you're wearing a Nirvana shirt, part of that is they actually do like that music, and they don't. My kid Nick's always talking about this. He doesn't feel like he ended up with his decade of music. There's lots of pop music and every decade has pop music, but he didn't end up with his grunge or his classic rock or his new wave or his heavy metal, whatever it was. He didn't get one because his was all music fighting about where they're going to be downloaded and who's going to get the money and
all that.
Yeah. Right.
When I do see one of those t-shirts, the Pink Floyd, Led Zeppelin ones on somebody who's clearly, in their 20s, I kind of want to say, quick, name five songs by the band that's on your shirt.
This goes back to our pre-show about let's talk about your shirt podcast. We're starting.
Yeah, exactly. Let's talk about your shirt coming soon to Spotify and Apple Podcasts and Google Play.
I like that name's
let's
great.
Let's talk about your shirt. Yeah. I do like it too. Yeah,
it's pretty good.
I want to bring this back to movies because, like, I remember there was a change at some point. I think the internet is the source of the change. And that is before a certain point, before the late 90s, you didn't really know what was coming and you didn't really care to know. Like, yeah, there were trailers and commercials and stuff, but, like, broadly speaking, a movie could surprise you. And now, like a couple weeks ago, we found out that Sam Mendes is making 4 Beatles films concurrently.
Right. I didn't
and they're
know
all
that.
Gonna, they're, yeah. They're concurrently making 4 Beatles films. Sam Mendes wants them to all come out in the same year. So 2027 mm-hmm. is when they're all going to come out, you know? So each one focuses on each of the 4 Beatles and
the Beatles cinematic universe. Can't wait.
Everybody, you know, and so it has all, if it has all the same stars and all the same stuff, right. They're going to all go together. And, and of course everybody made the joke like, well, who's no one's going to go see the Ringo movie, but
actually I was thinking that's the only one I would go see.
It's but, really, they're really just going to show Caveman, by the way.
Right.
Thomas the Tank Engine or something like that.
A new remastered version of Caveman.
Wow.
But that knowledge already is tainting it. You know what I mean? Like
tanked.
Like I'm so much better off if I don't have a story being told for the next 3 years about these movies, right?
Yeah.
You know, we really are. I mean, the information age came and it sat right on her face, and it's a totally different world now. Of course it is.
Yeah. I can't see or breathe. It's on my face.
It's all over my face. Yeah. I used to tell people, I'm like, oh, I want to own a movie theater, and I don't want people to come to the movie theater because I don't feel like the people at that time were going to the movie theaters to see the specific movie that was being shown. It was more about, this is my problem when multiplexes came along. I came from a place where there's like a 2 screens, maybe tops, and people used to go see whatever they could get. Right.
Yeah. Right. Whatever the next thing showing at 6:45 is, that's what we're going to see.
Yes. Yeah. That was the experience. And I was like, that is what people around here want. They want to come in. They want to have, you know, really good food, and whether it be whatever snacks it is, they want, you know, everything to, you know, the seats to be nice and comfy. That's what everybody really wanted. They weren't there to see a specific person. They were trying to escape their day-to-day lives.
Yeah.
They weren't following a, you know, a particular actor or anything. They may, but that wasn't the point of movies. Mm. And now it feels like you go to the theater specifically for specific reasons. And that kind of makes me sad. I used to like just going and just being surprised. I used to see so many things that would just shock me. It's like,
just
wow,
shifted
I didn't
to home.
If I would like that.
It's just at home now. You just turn on, you flip on Pluto and you go, I think that's why you're attracted to those things, honestly. Because those things are kind of random, not random, but there are aspects of it. It's like, oh, I'm just on here today. And look, it's some alien eating a pig or whatever. I'm going to watch that.
Yeah.
I think
of my favorite things. Some of my favorite things are things that surprised me. I was like, I had no idea I was coming into this. There's still a scene in a movie called Extro. I don't know if you guys ever watched it or not. It was about some kind of weird alien invasion kind of thing.
Extro?
And
I remember the name.
Extro, I think it's called. And I was never interested in watching it. It came on HBO one time, and I just happened to have it on. And watching that just changed my idea of special effects in films. And I was like, I would have never intentionally done that. And I love that.
Oh,
surprise.
The 1982 Extro.
Yes. It came on HBO back before it was Max.
Oh shit. This cover is very familiar.
Oh, it is. It is absolute trash, but it really,
this feels like one of those weird ones you'd see in the Blockbuster and go, I'm never watching that.
But, right. Yeah.
It was just, I just remember it being so violent, but it was all mostly psychological. It was just,
when Tony grows up, he's going to be just like Daddy, says the front cover.
Yes.
Wow.
Just like Daddy.
Oh, yeah. I totally
they were playing off E.T. because the other tagline is some extraterrestrials aren't friendly.
Right. Ooh. Yes. Or the invasion of the three kind, those people. Yeah.
Close aliens. Encounters. Yeah.
Amazing. Yeah. Amazing.
The pregnancy scene. Oh my God. That was the part that's probably affected me the most.
Let's get it on here. Why don't we have this?
I was just say, is this,
we'll have to watch the trailer. I think I've mentioned it in the past, but I don't think it ever came to streaming, but I'm going to post this trailer. If y'all just watch the trailer, you'll know what the hell you're in for. Extra, X-T-R-O, for those listening.
I just want an explanation of this scene right here. Is that how we want
it? Oh, yes.
Wait,
yes.
I'm not seeing it. Why? Oh, there it is. Popped.
Yeah, and I also posted the trailer. The trailer says a lot.
That thing you haven't posted. Jeez Louise.
Yeah, yeah.
That's, this is like like an accident on set of what was the thing called with the guys with the zippers? What were they called? Land of the Lost. The
Land of the Lost. The Sleestack.
Yeah. I'm just leaving.
He just extra just got him. It's over for him.
Oh, you're back. Oop. Now. Your internet went weird. Back.
For a second you went.
And then you disappeared.
No, I look at this photo and the first thing is like, okay, so clearly this is a guy who's walking on his hands and feet with his chest up and they've put a mask on the back of his head.
Walk around. He's crab walking, right? That's why I need to see this film right now.
Yeah.
Put this on the list, Randy. Get it in there.
Got it. I got it already.
All right.
Can I give you a great reason to enjoy Cowboys and Aliens?
Always.
Oh, please do.
We have only our second film ever on FilmSack with the incredible Ana de la Rivera. She is the wife. We saw her previously on Army of the Dead. She was like a gunner in the group that invades Las Vegas.
Right.
And in both movies, in both Army of the Dead and this movie, her name is Maria.
She probably gets typecast as a lot of Marias,
What does she play as? I thought the wife.
Sam Rockwell's wife.
Sam Rockwell's wife.
Suffering wife. She's so put upon by all of this cowboying going on around her.
I'm sorry. I'm just looking at this extra trailer. What the F are we doing? We have to watch this. We have to see this movie.
Good Lord. I said, the special effect, 82, man, I hadn't seen a lot of crazy practical effects. And I think this movie probably impacted me more than just about any.
We got to do it then.
To that point.
We got
to
do it. Yeah. Get it on there. Somehow crazy we'll get stuff. It. Here's some other trivia for you. The director, Jon Favreau, was constantly harassed. This might be a little scrutiny, but anyway, constantly harassed. Take that definition as you will, with demands to shoot or convert the film to 3D, but he held his ground.
No, it wouldn't have helped it.
Well, definitely wouldn't have helped it, but whether or not he was like having some valiant fight against everyone who harassed him.
Right, exactly.
If you did 3D, you could get into the IMAX theaters is the big film that week. I mean, yeah, I get the pressure.
It's also 2011. I'm sure it was like this.
Hey John, should we maybe think about doing this in 3D? Nah, I don't want to. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. That was the level of harassment he experienced. As a male,
this guy's harassing me.
As a male director in Hollywood, that's the level of harassment you can expect.
Right. That's right, exactly.
But we were in the heyday of 3D films. Like 2009 was Avatar, right? And then they were pushing it. If you went to buy a TV in 2011, all those TVs were being advertised as 3D capable and had the glasses and everything. So I could see why there might
I never shy away from my love of 3D. And if you're going to film something specifically to be in 3D and it's going to enhance the film, I'm all down. Or if it's animated, because animated 3D animated films, it's really just a matter of setting a second camera up and shifting it a little bit. There's a no-brainer. Just you can do it easily, but everything else.
Yeah, either film it in 3D or forget it, because artificial 3D looks terrible. And
by the way, Night Flight, which I've been trying to get you guys this past week, Night Flight Plus.
I thought about subscribing to that. Yeah.
Right. Well, extra three.
Wait, what's Night Flight Plus? Series? Tell me more what you're saying. What is it?
Oh, Night Flight.
Remember Night Flight, the old video, music video thing?
No, I had Friday Night Videos is all I had. Saw it. Besides MTV, obviously.
But. No, this was cable. This was mostly VH1 is where I experienced
VH1?
It, right?
Right, right.
Okay. Yeah. I don't remember at all. We had Night Flight Comics here. That was a comic book store, but
right.
I don't know what this is.
USA is where it started before. Like they showed reruns on VH1 or something, but it was Night Flight. And now you can watch all those episodes on this Night Flight Plus streaming service, which is like, I kind of want to watch it. I didn't realize they had things besides music video. So you're saying Extra was on that.
Well, I thought it was, but it says extra three. First of all, I didn't know there was any such
thing. Extra three. Watch the skies.
Oh, geez. Oh, they launched this in 2016. I had no idea. This is news to me. All right. Roku, Amazon, Apple, they're all on there.
Just reminded me of the best moment of my week. So Thursday night, I'm take my kid to fencing, right? He fences for an hour, and then I'm taking him home. On the way home, we're really hungry, and we're just looking for a place to eat. And we decide to go into this corner store, East Coast style deli, in Costa Mesa, and it's called Philly something. And we go in, and of course it's run by Indians, so you know it's going to be good. And the shop where we find ourselves sitting and eating cheesesteak sandwiches has a TV on each wall, so they're facing each other. You got to turn one way, you see a TV. Turn the other way, you see the other TV. One of them is showing the Vin Diesel movie A Man Apart, but it's muted. So okay, so that's who cares.
Sure.
The other TV, which you can hear the sound from, is, I shit you not, it's running a tape of VH1 from 2004, and I'm here to tell you. I'm here to tell you, I could have sat there all night and watched that thing. It was it was just a program of a bunch of music videos that were new in 2004, and I was just captured by this.
Yeah, you were using your training that you got through. I love it.
Oh my gosh.
By the way,
yeah, go ahead.
Extro is available for streaming online which I didn't know this. Extra is a UK movie. If you are subscribed to the Prime version of Prime in the UK. Okay. So you guys, you suckers are getting it over there. Not us, though.
Ibbot, I've made a valiant effort twice to get them off this subject. Can you have anything?
As you can tell. I think
we can't do anything until Scott finally finishes the trailer.
Yeah, and, it is really awesome, you guys.
Nothing but photos from the trailer.
I've never agreed with Dunaway more in my life. This is unbelievably cool. So cheesy. All right, I'll tell you what. Here's something to get us off of it. I have some. I have scrutiny about this. So there are two things in the trivia. Robert Downey Jr. had worked with director Jon Favreau on the first two Iron Man movies. Was set to play Zeke Jackson, a former Union Army gunslinger, but dropped out due to scheduling conflicts when Sherlock Holmes: Game of Shadows 2011 was abruptly greenlit. Within a month, the character was renamed Jake Lonergan. And written out to be an outlaw. Downey was replaced with Daniel Craig. Then they say this, and here's where the scrutiny kicks in.
Scrutiny.
It says Daniel Craig was chosen because of his distinct likeness to Steve McQueen.
Well, you just told me it was a whole other reason.
Right, exactly. What? He was not chosen. He was a backup choice.
I hate that.
So what? Yeah. Because this is a remake of Steve McQueen's old Cowboys and Aliens? What the hell does that have to do with it?
There was no old Cowboys.
I know. That's what I'm saying.
That said, though, how do we feel about Robert Downey Jr. As your lead, as Jake? I kind of like that idea.
It would have been probably more comedic.
Very much more comedic.
Too much talking.
Maybe. Right.
I kind of do the more stoic thing.
I kind of like that too. That whole first scene where he wakes up with the iron on his wrist and takes out those three
ne'er-do-wells,
thieves, or whatever they are.
I call them the gang of hats, because each one of them has their own style of hat. One's got a bowler, one's got like a cowboy hat. They all have these very distinct hats.
And it's fine. Anybody who can pull a little bit of like dark comedy out of all these situations, because like the whole movie, the main character keeps running across people that he did crimes with in the past. That's a funny idea, and like you don't make it too funny, right?
Mm-hmm, right.
But like Robert Downey Jr. can totally do that.
We didn't talk at all about, I don't know how we've missed it, but we haven't talked about Keith Carradine, Sheriff, at all. That guy's in everything.
Well, we did. Did we talk about
him? Oh, I missed it.
About him losing his weight. And that was even before you got hooked on the extra.
Yeah.
But like, he's so good in like freaking Deadwood and Fargo
Deadwood was mentioned.
No, I know that. I remember that. But
Dexter.
Dexter, it was great in that.
My favorite season of Dexter was the Keith Carradine season. Well, or the John Lithgow season. God, they were both so good.
That one was amazing. That John Lithgow. I thought of him differently after that season.
Yeah.
That stuck with me. And it was hard to get over it, to be honest. I'd see something where he's kind of like a nice grandpa or something. Right. And I'd go, oh.
I don't believe it for one second after that.
Yeah.
After that Dexter season.
He was freaking evil in that. Man,
yeah. I did love how he kept running across people, but definitely Walter Goggins Hunt character was definitely my favorite. You're always my favorite. That was definitely my favorite interaction.
Yeah, that
and
was
I'm
all
glad
right.
He did. It looked like he ended up surviving. He had some close calls in the final lost battle the scene, but
right, lost or pounded again, and then lost again. Yeah. There's a the middle of the movie, like the tooth is back, and I'm like, what? They just didn't even. They didn't care. Who cares?
Yeah.
Close enough.
This was what, a year after True Grit, and there's a trivia in here about the fabric used to make Ella Swenson's. That's what's her name.
Olivia Wilde.
Olivia Wilde.
Yeah.
Dress had originally been considered for Hailee Steinfeld's wardrobe in True Grit in 2010, but had been deemed too feminine for that film. So
really, I thought I liked the wardrobe of that because I felt like they could have played it very overtly sexual. You know, it's like had something really thin you could all practically see through. No, it was this real thick, thick cloth that would be practical for someone who was out, you know, working the fields and mooing the cows, whatever you do in Western.
Yeah, mooing the cows. That's it.
Mooing the cows. Hey, get out there and moo those cows, would you?
We ain't got all day, boy. We're losing sunlight here.
I'm doing it right.
Moo. Moo.
There's that thing in 310 to Yuma where the girl that from the bar that ends up getting with Russell Crowe for a bit, and he's always talking about how she's so skinny, she looks sick. And I think back then there was like this feeling of that. Like if you were I mean, I'm talking like the actual history of this. When you were real super thin, male or female, you were considered something's wrong with you. You got the consumption or whatever. Yeah. And she did actually in that movie. But we see this and we just sort of go, oh, yeah, it's Olivia Wilde. She's thin and, you know, everyone thinks she's hot and all that. But if this was a real Old West thing, they'd probably avoided her. She was like,
I like how they played it because they could have easily like just constantly been trashing her going, you woman, you don't belong here. And then they just kind of just, you know, it's like everybody is. We have bigger issues at hand.
Yeah, like aliens. Aliens.
Stealing our gold.
Yeah, with weird little spindly arms inside their heart holes.
I love the arms. What did they... We haven't even talked about it except for my intro. I love that... I hated it and loved it. I love the fact that these little creepy arms come out of their chest.
Yeah.
But then I'm like, next their heart? What kind of evolution? They got these aliens even make it off their own planet.
Right.
With that kind of a,
it does make it a lot easier when they're on a plane and in coach class and they want to eat something on their tray table.
Yeah. Like this practicality or impracticality of having two little tiny arms in there is good for like, you know, intricate work. You need a little bit of, you need some dexterity on your, you know, you're building a model out of balsa wood.
Exactly.
Yeah.
They move so slow.
Yeah. But then when you don't, you got these big lumbering freaking carapace arms that can destroy five men in one swing. And that's a weird design.
Yeah. What I loved is that the little boy, Emmett Taggart, had been given a knife by old man Dollarhide. And so when we finally come to realize, oh, here's a weakness in these aliens.
Yeah.
The little boy's got a knife, a big knife too.
Yeah.
Let's go. Yeah. Good job.
That's Aang from the terrible year before Last Airbender deal.
Noah Ringer.
Noah Ringer, yeah. Didn't do much else. He's in three things total. I thought he was good in this. Smart little actor, no problem. But I guess he got out of the business before it ate him up. So good on him.
Good plan.
But that Aang movie, so bad.
Oh,
his third credit is an appearance on Conan. So that's not even really an acting job.
O'Brien?
Yeah, O'Brien.
Okay.
No, The Barbarian. He had an appearance on The Barbarian.
You gotta clarify. You can't just throw Conan out there.
Yeah, I don't think anyone knew, and no one would have any idea that I meant Conan O'Brien. What else? Anything else you guys want to mention before we clip it? Do the clip.
No, just the fact that they sure did let a lot of people die just to save 12 people from that spaceship.
Yep.
And more than 12 people died in that attack if they just would have let
them go. But they were no good nicks. Who cared about them?
They were gang members.
No. Our main character explains that you either attack these guys and win or they will kill us. They will hunt us down.
I know.
It wasn't a rescue mission. It was a fight for survival.
Yeah, it was a little bit of both.
You know, I totally forgot. I kept forgetting. Even to this point, I still forget that the reason why they were fighting them is because they were the scouts for the eventual full invasion.
Right,
I think it's
exactly.
Because the scouts were so sidetracked with collecting gold because, You know, I think of a scout, they like show up, they get real serious. It's like, okay, let's investigate this place. Let's get out of here. Okay, let's go. But these scouts were like, let's get here. And ooh, they got gold. Let's stick for a while.
Yeah. I also kind of, there's a little bit of a check in the bucket there because you are led to believe that there's a much more fierce force coming after them. Right.
Right.
Like
right,
the second wave is going to be like the soldiers and the.
Yeah. These guys are nothing compared to who's next.
Yeah. So these are just, you know, drones or whatever. But.
Yeah, they never get to that. It's a reflection of what's going on in this whole conversation about, you know, pioneers going across the country and, you know, moving everybody, the Native Americans, out of the way like insects, or killing them or scalping them, whatever the case may be. And the same thing, right? We had some prospectors who were here and they were checking stuff out.
Yeah.
Later.
I did like how they tried to cram in some sub-stories about that. Like, yeah. Harrison Ford can't stand the red man. And now, he's like, oh, now we're like fellow warrior friends and we're good buddies. Right. And I don't know. That stuff was a little heavy, a little ham-fisted.
Luckily, they didn't really linger on it too long. They was just like, hey, but what are the aliens doing?
Yeah, I don't know if they lingered on it enough is my point. It just kind of made it seem throwaway, and those are like real big issues.
Right.
This is what Jon Favreau does, though, right? Like he packs the emotional punch into a small space.
Mm, right.
And often you can cover like
1-inch emotional punch.
I love the movie Elf, but my gosh, does it gloss over a bunch of like how families relate to each other.
Right. how we treat short people.
Yeah. They just solve their problems by singing a song at night. You know, like, you know, it's just Jon Favreau's way of doing it.
It is kind of his, it's his jam. It's good. That's why he's good for Star Wars, I think, because Star Wars is sometimes at its best when it just goes pure fantasy and doesn't get too bogged down in the big issues. Although I loved Andor and that thing got bogged down in big issues and I love it. So I don't know, different touch for a different thing. It's fine. Let's do some clips. These are clips and they are here for the listening. That's what I've been told. So I'm going to play them. Here's one for you. This is Daniel Craig waking up. That's how he wakes up.
Trope. That is such a trope.
Yeah.
Isn't that how Wild Wild West 112
episodes of Lost began with that sort of thing.
Yeah, that's kind of off-putting way to start a movie.
That's true.
Is that how Wild Wild West started? Where they woke up and they had the things on their neck, or was that later? I think that's how it started, right?
Is that how it began?
It starts with a chick in a bucket. Come on, guys.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. Felt the same.
Maybe they filmed this in the same place. Anyway, which one are you?
Only two kinds of men get shot. Criminals and victims. Well, which one are you?
I don't know.
Oh, the Kurgan. Mm. The Kurgan.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Going after him. Only one must live. No, only one can stand. No, what is it? Only one.
Only the penitent man shall pass.
What's the thing? What is it? Oh, a shit.
There can be only one.
There can be only one. Thank you. Jeez. I knew I was in the ballpark, but I was pretty far off. All right, Paul Dano. I thought he was great in this. Here's a line from him.
You ungrateful for our business? Because if it wasn't for my pa's cattle, there'd be no money going through this town. There'd be no meat on your tables, and your doors would be closed. Huh?
I don't mean no disrespect to your father, Percy, you know that.
Of course not. But you ask me to pay.
Oh, man. Paul Dano.
Yeah.
Hey, we need a weird shaped little freak in our movie. Who can we call?
That we're going to instantly hate.
Yeah.
On it.
Yeah.
Does this guy say baby's a dumb or maybe he's dumb? I'm going to play it and you guys decide.
Baby's a dummy.
Baby's a dummy?
Yeah. Baby's a dummy.
Maybe he's a dummy.
Maybe he's a dummy.
Well, he really crammed that.
How come he's not responding to us? Maybe he's a dummy.
Maybe he's a dummy.
Maybe he's a dummy.
Nope. It doesn't sound like he's saying baby's a dummy.
Maybe he's a dummy.
That kid you just birthed, he's a dummy.
I can't stop thinking about that scene. Like the whole movie, I'm thinking, he put his bare feet in another man's boots and absorbed all the fungus.
It's pretty gross.
I did like that. How often we've seen that? I mean, I couldn't help but to think about the Terminator when he shows up all of a sudden and, you know, you have to, it's like, well, I gotta get in some clothes. It's more appropriate. Yeah. And you have to,
give me your jacket and your boots. Yeah.
Yeah. You walk around in a dead man's clothes, rest of the movie.
Sure.
It's interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He wore them all the way to the end, man. He was in those all the way to the bitter end. Yeah.
Those are at least two sizes too big shoes.
Right, which is what you want in that situation.
Yeah, yeah. Big socks.
Because
he has dainty little like Chinese lady feet in there.
I think the Japanese are the ones who do the foot binding.
They're the ones who do the foot binding, yeah.
Oh, I thought it was Chinese.
We'll allow it.
I thought it was Chinese. I really did think it was Chinese foot binding, is it not?
It might be both. Maybe everybody does it. Yeah.
Foot binding.
I think everybody does.
Yeah, it says right here, Chinese custom, it says.
All right.
I assume that's right.
Did you look up Chinese customs?
No, I looked up foot binding, and it says.
Yeah, foot binding.
Yeah, the Wikipedia article, sentence says Chinese custom.
I always thought it was Japanese.
I guess Japanese have the other binding, which is their custom.
I thought
custom.
It was because the geishas. I thought they did the whole thing. See, I got mine mixed up. So, look at
what
that.
What are you thinking? You go what look. Am I thinking? You think all Asia are the same. That's what you think.
All Asia? Okay.
All Asia.
Okay.
You think all them Asians are the same, boy? All right. Here's the thing that grossed me out. I saved it for audio. It's this, and I'll explain.
Rise and shine.
When he spits on him to wake him up.
Oh, God, that was so gross.
Paul Dano spit? Dude, that's the worst alarm you
gross.
Ever did.
Especially constant, like just torturing him through those bars, spitting on him. Constantly.
Yeah, and there's a hang time. Listen to this.
Right.
He spits.
the ejection and landing.
That
basically,
is so gross, dude.
The film sack checklist, spittle hang time.
Yeah. Yeah. That's really gross. All right. Nobody calls him. What?
Nobody calls me Colonel.
Oh, nobody calls me Colonel.
Nobody wants him.
So that's lampshaded at the end of the movie. And I thought that was really cool because in the end, main character calls him Colonel and gets away with it because he's dead, right? He's considered dead.
Oh, right. So. Yeah, good point. After Windtalker died, all that changed. Here's Mr. Ford, if you please.
You only been riding for my brand for, 2 weeks? You don't maybe know who you're dealing with, Roy.
I was in Hollywood Confidential or whatever the hell that was called.
Why does he sound drunk?
Homicide.
He does sound drunk.
I do like that you try to make it a better movie by invoking L.A. Confidential.
Right.
Hollywood Confidential. Oops. What's this? Deny drinking guy? I don't know what this is.
I have been drinking. Yes, I'm on the Tuesday drinking.
I just like how he sounds.
I ain't been drinking.
Jet Creek Toby Huss right there.
Yeah, there you go.
Taking a dump. All right, what kind of man blows up cows?
What kind of a man goes around blowing up other people's cows?
Yeah, that's some good Harrison Ford, man.
Turns out, Alien Man is what does that.
Yeah.
Yeah, Alien Man does it. Mm-hmm. And then he likes to do a cuss.
God damn it.
That's pretty good. Do a little cuss there. All right, here's Paul Dano screaming after he broke his hand to get the irons off. All right, there's that. That's
great. I loved it when he convinced him. He's like, "Just let me. I'm gonna get a side of this. So let me hold your hands." And then he breaks his hand.
Yeah, great. That was pretty good. And he can make a real squeal if he needs.
God, he does so good.
I like this bit.
Is my wife in there?
No.
All right.
That's great. Wow. Okay.
It was.
Why are we yelling?
Sam Rockwell and Harrison Ford having a moment. I liked it. Don't know much about them boats.
I don't know much about boats. I'd say that one's upside down.
Genuinely made me laugh out loud.
He's so great. I just watched Seven Psychopaths for the first time.
Oh yeah,
that movie's awesome, and he's Sam Rockwell as usual, freaking amazing in it. Watch that movie. All right, Walton Goggins comes into view.
Is this your new gang, Jake? I never thought I'd see you again, Jake. You're always my favorite.
Ooh. It's a very small role, but I enjoyed it.
Cool. He was so good at that.
Yeah.
This was
he should be in every Western. Put him in every Western.
This is like two seasons into Justified or so. So his star was on the rise. Here's more of him.
You got good fishing. Good tequila. You want to come with us?
Okay. Love it.
He sold me.
Wasn't he in Django or am I thinking wrong? He's in Django. Yeah, he's the one whipping Django upside down and Django's naked and hitting him in the nuts. Yeah. How can I forget?
Wow, you recall that really well.
Oh, that stuck with me, dude. That really hung around.
Yeah.
Oh, my
gosh.
Wait
to watch Extro.
That would hurt. It's also in the other Hateful Eight. He was good in that, too. Yeah. All right, Harrison Ford is grumpy.
Look, we can't just run around hollering and throwing spears and shooting arrows at the damn thing. We got to draw them out of there onto open ground where we can surround them, attack them on all sides, flank them.
Flank them.
Flank them.
Flank them.
Oh, man, I love the way he says flank them. Yeah.
Flank them.
What kind of steak do you like?
Flank them.
Flank them.
Flank steak.
Sounds like Steak-ems with flank steak.
Yeah. Ooh,
steak-ems. I'm going to sound this old when I do Dial of Destiny in a few years. But then they're going to de-age me and it won't sound right.
Flank them.
All right, excellent work, everyone. Those are our sound clips. Now it's time for us to dive headlong into the checklist. I just realized I really had no audio from Daniel Craig. Apologies to Daniel Craig lovers.
He's quiet through the whole movie. Like he has five lines.
Yeah, he doesn't have much
to
say.
Which is great.
Film set checklist. James Bond and Han Solo take on the world as they try to get the Riddler back and help the Wind Talkers? Your arm gun makes no sense. Check. And finally, Goggins and Sam Rockwell in the same movie. More, please. Check.
Right. Yeah. Just everybody in this movie. It just, like, you could hardly miss with me with this cast.
Oh, yeah. Great cast. Mm-hmm. Like a proper Western with this cast. I'm all in.
Or a proper alien movie.
Yeah, either way. Go either way. Soundtrack great. I gave it an NM for a nice mix of Western and weird tech sounding music. I thought it was all right. Worked for me.
Yeah.
Is it someone we know? Someone regular to these folks?
regular to these before? Folks?
Well,
someone been around these parts before?
Somebody, somebody who works with Favreau. I don't know.
It's Harry Gregson-Williams.
I don't know who that is.
Harry Gregson-Williams. So this is, I'm just thinking, like, Martian.
Okay.
That was a good soundtrack. I like that.
He kind of made a name for himself doing the orchestrated parts of Shrek movies, but
Okay.
All right.
So we probably know him most from this. Then I got
worked
you.
With okay. Hans Zimmer on The Rock.
Oh, that's cool.
Enemy of the State. Worked with Trevor Rabin.
Yeah. So he was part of all those big action '90s things.
Yeah.
Well, good for him.
Spy Game.
It worked good. It worked well here.
Yeah. Man on Fire. We saw that.
Rundown.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. We like that. You know what? The flashback scenes in this movie reminded me of most of Man on Fire's filming techniques. You know what I mean? Like the weird colors and the flashy lights. It was weird. Yeah. Anyway.
Harry Gregson-Williams has been doing all the music for The Gilded Age, the series.
Oh, okay.
And that's pretty good.
That's well thought of.
That ain't bad.
People like The Gilded Age.
That's just fine.
My wife liked that show.
It's fine.
I like it. Just we're all talking like cowboys today.
Right.
Let's get to let's see. Oh, the social media post. Okay, now let me explain. This is where you three sum the movie up in 280 characters or less. That's all you get. That's the maximum. That's it. And I was told by somebody over the week that I should start with somebody else this week instead of the usual. So this week we start with Randy.
Cowboys and Aliens. My people have this ancient tale of rustic gunfolk and the West. They ride great horses, need no trail, and cover the fair lady's breast with any blanket that's at hand. But first, check out her naked bod. That's what your nature does demand. But that's too bad, because, oh my God, she has no private parts because she's an alien, and they figured they didn't need to cosplay in that much detail, you pervert.
Wow. Your poem broke all the poetry rules at the end, I noticed. It just went all, it exploded.
Yeah.
Could you hear it over Dunaway?
Yeah, I could. Just barely, though.
No.
Oh.
He's, the National the National Caffeine Board called, and they want Brian to be their spokesman.
They want all their caffeine back.
Yeah. First of all, they want all the caffeine back. Second of all, would you please represent the company? All right.
Oh.
Moving on to the next person, which in this list is Brian Dunaway.
Oh, cowboys and aliens. Only two kinds of films get shot. Cowboys or aliens. So which are you? Cowboy or alien? Both. Hashtag river dump.
River dump. Ooh.
River dump.
My favorite Irish dance. We're going the same place with that. That was great. All right. Let's round it out with the remaining Brian Ibbett.
I wrote this one in the first 5 minutes of the film and just stuck with it. Cowboys and Aliens. Bound. James Bound.
Oh, I like that.
Damn it. That's a good alternative title. Nice job.
Yeah.
I was having a hard time with this one, so I'll tell you what those are, because they're rough. Knives Out, Logan Lucky. I think the sky done fall. There you go.
That was actually good.
That's very good, too. I love it.
Good.
Or Indiana Jones and his idiot doofus son. That was almost the other name.
Yeah, that's good, too.
Let's get to the emails. We got a quick email here from Hendrick, who wrote in to filmsack@gmail.com. Says, greetings, Filmsack. Well, greetings right back to you. It says, please watch the movie Cocktail for one of your summer episodes.
Oh.
I promise you it's the perfect Filmsack movie. It has everything. It has young Tom Cruise and Elizabeth Shue. It has a great music soundtrack, a great New York and Jamaica setting. It has the weirdest sex scene ever, aside from The Room. Oh yeah, that was weird.
Oh God, yeah, that one. I finally had gotten that one out of my mind. Thanks, dude.
Is that just Room or The Room?
The Room.
Okay.
Just Here's Room too, right? is there better not right. be a sex. Well, I guess there was a sex scene in Room.
Oh, but, hey Mark.
With Brie Larson, hi, Mark. But it was.
Yeah. Wait, what am I thinking of? The Room. Oh, right. I'm mixing the two up. They're both very uncomfortable sex scenes, but the one in The Room is way worse. Yeah.
One is brilliantly shot and very well done. The other one is Wiseau.
Yeah. One of them made me hurt.
I did not hit her.
That one in Room made me want to jump through the screen and beat the shit out of that guy. How about that? Yeah. This other one made me just cringe. Anyway, he says, I know this movie kind of sucks, but I can't help but love it. I watch it at least once a month. Jeez. Nice. So it's also an obsession, just like Scott's Waterworld or Fury Road. Yeah, but okay. Anyway, however, I don't mind if you hate it. I'm comfortable with my choices of bad movies. At the same time, I hope it can be a rewatchable movie for you guys as well, especially Brian Dunaway, who is my favorite film sacker. Love you guys, Henrik. Oh,
thank you so much.
Henrik. Yeah, thanks a lot, Henrik. Jeez Louisa.
But that's good. No, what are y'all complaining about? This is perfect.
No, it's good.
Genius.
I don't mind. You know what? We like to get our old Tom Cruise shit in order here. Why not? Well, let's do Cocktail.
It's also got the absolute really worst song that the Beach Boys ever recorded, but that's fine. That's fine.
That is a mighty low bar.
And it's got that guy.
Oh,
it's,
no.
It's got the dude from FX who's not Brian Dennehy in it.
The other Brian Brown.
Brian Brown, that's it.
Yeah,
I haven't thought about Cocktail in many a year, except for the soundtrack. Whenever somebody says something about Bermuda, I can't not start singing Bermuda, Bahama,
pretty mama. Isn't Cocktail
have that on Laserdisc?
Cocktail's a Tony Scott joint, is it not? No, Roger Donaldson. Never mind, wrong movie.
Roger Donaldson.
Can you
see the cover art to that film? In your head? Okay.
Everybody
I can't
knows there's a place called Coco.
That's a perfectly fine song. Like
it is not.
If you put it up against like some genuinely terrible Beach Boys songs, I think you'll realize
it was the not. There's the entirely horrible Love You album by the Beach Boys, which I had on vinyl. It actually has a whole song about giving your child a bath. I wish I was kidding.
Wow.
But you listen to Pet Sounds and you think to yourself, wow, this is the same guy who did Kokomo. Yeah. Huh. Wow.
Yeah, got a real Starship versus Jefferson Airplane kind of problem.
Right. It really is. Yeah.
And it's not the same guy who did, who wrote like Stay True to Your School, which is just a terrible song.
Yeah. But that Stay True to Your School was there's two versions of that or the same song, but they have different lyrics, I think. Or am I thinking of two different things?
Oh,
I might be thinking
like Cowboys and Aliens.
Yeah. Speaking of, there's a Beach Boys song called 10 Little Indians. You should not listen to it. It is a bad song.
You should go play NES's Wampum while you're at it.
Sure,
play,
why not?
Make yourself,
that thing. You want to be real offended for the Native Americans? That's a video game to play.
Yeah.
By the way, I didn't know that guy made... So this is the same director did Cocktail, did No Way Out. He did The Getaway, the more modern Getaway, which is pretty good. Dante's Peak, 13 Days. Wow. World's Fastest Indian, fantastic movie. Oh, my gosh.
Oh, Roger Donaldson?
Yeah.
That's about a motorcycle, by the way, not world's fastest Native American.
Correct.
Just saying.
Yeah, and it was all and that also has Walton Goggins in it, and it was filmed in on the Salt Flats out here where I live. It's an amazing movie. If you've never seen that, that's like top-tier Anthony Hopkins performance. It's so good.
Speaking of filming locations, if you watched Oppenheimer before the Oscars, and then you watched Silverado with us, and then you watched this movie... I am so tired of this filming location. I'm done. It's great. It's beautiful. It's wonderful. But my gosh, this like Can we get a movie that's somewhere
else? Everyone borrows it because it is strikingly alien out there. Like, it's a half hour or 45 minute drive for me if I go out there. It's not very far. And it's as if you're on a different planet. And so I understand why people do it. It's a, right. you know, billions of years old or millions of years old salt deposit flat thing. It's crazy that it even exists. But Randy's right. Everybody films there. Everybody. Yeah. Hell, one of the intros to some, what was the comedian that used it for their intro? And they're just walking in it. It's like, really? You could have done anything else. Anyway, I understand why people want to do it, but it's even as a local, I get it. It's a little much.
I just Googled a little geology. The salt flats are about 20 to 30,000 years old.
30,000. Okay. I thought it was in the millions, but what do I know? It's very old. I know that. Let's go on to look at this, a voicemail. All right. This is about our episode 666. It's about 23 seconds long. We have a recommendation. Here you go.
Hey, this is Jim, from Connecticut, also known as Seahawk Jim. A call in about the 666th episode. I have a suggestion. Arnold Schwarzenegger's End of Days. It is perfect for the 666 episode. And I think you guys would have a blast. All right. Love the show, guys.
Have we not done that? I thought
we have not. Okay. It has been on my watch list for a long time. We're never catching it when it's on a good streamer.
Mm. All right. We'll put extra effort, though, if we can, you know, because it sounds like it's end times, right? If end of days.
Yeah.
End times.
Isn't that the one with Arnold Schwarzenegger in the front taking the eye exam?
That's the other one.
Sixth day.
Oh, I thought I saw the sequel, which was the ninth day.
Who starred in that? Because that was direct video. That it wasn't even Schwarzenegger. That would have been the ninth day. Who's poor man?
According to IMDb, Schwarzenegger was considered for the part.
Oh, of course. That's what they do. I get it. Nicely done. Let's move on to this quick text from a listener. Good morning, Vietnam. You should sack that movie, by the way, says this listener. There's no name on this. Pretty much every horror movie at the same time, except for sneaky Disney ones, of course, those are honestly terrifying and they should be LOL. Anyway, I think this guy might be a little high when he wrote this. Like you said, we snuck out. My first rated R movie was American Ninja when I was 13 years old at a sleepover. I'll never forget that poor construction worker falling into a mine pick. The first time I'd ever seen somebody really die on screen. I wasn't ready, LOL. A little stream of consciousness from a listener, but I enjoyed it. Yeah. Thank you for that. And also, Good Morning Vietnam, probably, I think, sackable. It's an amazing movie.
We've discussed this in the past. Yeah. And the only reason why I've ever thought maybe not is because it has a lot of comedy, but it's very serious, too. So, I mean.
I think it fits. I think we could do it.
Yeah.
Didn't we do, Dead Poets Society, didn't we?
Maybe. No. We did not. That's a
we got to do that.
That's interesting. Maybe.
I like that movie.
Isn't that movie like 6 hours long though? You know,
no, not at all. I watched it about a year ago.
Brian's first thing is how long is the movie?
Wait, what is it? Dead Poets. It is exactly 2 hours 8 minutes. Pretty long.
Okay, so, no, that's not bad. I can squeeze 2 hours.
What's your 215, 220. Where do we have to start worrying about that?
I watch it. So I have a guaranteed time slots. I have two lunch hours that I can take that will get a 2 hour or less movie. If it goes beyond that, I have to start shifting things. I have to go, Scott, we can't record it this time. I got to move it down to here.
I like that you're like, I'm not watching shit unless I can do it at lunch. I love that. It's a great way.
Your schedule's full.
let's put this. It really is. Yeah. Now let's put it this way. Lots of times I'll find 2 hours here or there in a week, but I only can guarantee that if everything else falls through that I have two hours, I definitely can do it. other than that, lots of times if I have plenty of time, like let's say a Wednesday comes along and nothing's going on that night, I'll just watch it then. It's fine. I can go 3 hours, but I can't guarantee it. You know what I mean? Schedule's tight.
I get it.
Yeah.
Tight is what you'd say.
I work 46 hours a week at my day job, and then I do my podcast and stream. That's about 20 hours. That's what, 66 hours?
That extra six, if you're doing 46, that's 6 hours. That's illegal.
You're only the U.S. lots at 40 only, man. You should be getting.
I collect. Well, see, the extra 6 hours I collect is comp time that I can eventually use.
No, all right. It's not. They don't give it to you. It's not overtime.
Up until I get to 300 hours. No, some salary. So I get comp time, which means eventually I can take time off, but I can accrue up to 300 hours of that.
That
and
sounds
so
like
then
some,
I usually purge, yeah. And I'll take like a week off.
That's some skeevy southern bullshit. Skeevy southern bullshit. You're two ticks away from your kids have to work at age 10 or some shit like that.
Yeah.
Go after them. Go after
them. It's the life in America.
That's right. Hell yeah, or F yeah. All right. that is it for your correspondence. Thank you all for that. 801-471-0462 or filmsack@gmail.com. I'd like to thank some patrons this week. Got a brand new patron named Crusades, as well as some old folks like Sutranu and Angel Brune. These are just a few of the fantastic, wonderful people that help support us on our show. Patreon.com/filmsack is the place to go. You'll get no commercials, pre-show content every week, art in the mail. I just did a Dune-related one. Big shock. Maybe more of that next month. We'll see. And some other cool stuff, including host bonus episodes. I'll be putting up a host bonus episode sometime before next weekend. So watch for that. And as it is my month. And also, this is a great time for us to mention next week we'll be watching Teen Wolf.
Sweet.
Yeah.
Not Teen Wolf 2.
Nope.
Teen Wolf 1.
Right.
I have been tracking this movie for 14 years, guys. Yeah. This has been in our future so long. I am so ready to sack this movie.
It is time. My gosh.
How many minutes of pleasure will you get in the room, in the closet? Come on.
is that more than the guy in the bleachers?
Oh, it has been a while, dude. And the bleacher thing is, that's a real thing, right? Or what version are we going to get? Are we going to get the version where they cut it out or the version where they left that in?
Oh, I don't know. I didn't know if there was a version where they cut it out.
I thought they went, once they knew, I think they went.
Interesting.
I'm not sure, though.
Like the dude and the little kid in Back to the Future 3 pointing to his crotch because he has to pee.
What does it say about Michael J. Fox that all the famous wiener pointing?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? That's weird.
Point, yeah.
Something that's a little too close for us. Coincidence. But anyway, we'll find out next week with Teen Wolf. Available where? Where is that streaming?
That is on Amazon Prime.
Okay.
Amazon Prime?
There it is.
Why are you asking
It's on Max. All right.
Max.
The guy that thinks that only things should be on Netflix because he can watch them at 2X or whatever. Sorry, this week you're going to have to watch it on a service that doesn't support that.
I am so far away from that mentality in everything. I can't listen to a podcast faster than 1X. I can't watch.
Same.
People watch TikTok videos faster. I'm like, what are you? How do you get the jokes?
Yeah. You have to hold down the little left side of that screen. I learned that by accident. And I don't know who's doing that for fun. That seems insane to me. Like, I know the world's full of like signals and you're trying to catch it all, people. I know. But try to slow down and enjoy something, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Just let it wash over you a little bit. Like me saying, filmsack.com is our website. Go there. There's all our stuff. See how slow I said it? Nice and easy to understand.
Like, let it roll down your cheeks like a spit from Paul Dano. Just let it roll.
Paul Dano trying to wake you up.
Yeah, with some hang time. Ugh. Filmsack@gmail.com, as always. And don't forget us to review us on the various sites where you get your shows. You know, if it's Apple Podcasts or whatever, you know, leave us a review. It brings people to the yard. And that's what we're interested in here. That's going to do it for us. Thanks, everybody. For me, for Brian, and for Randy.
Be a man.
See you next time.
Get more at frogpants.com.
Is my wife in there?
No!
All right. Jeez Louise.
I don't see her!
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here.
I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.